Hey, welcome to Everyday Non-Ordinary. I'm your host, Jenny Wiener. I just got back from my first Horizons conference, which is one of the longest running, if not the longest running, conferences devoted to psychedelics. It's held in New York City each year, which is really nice to have something on the East Coast in the United States, because so much of the stuff going on related to psychedelics right now is on the West Coast here. So it was really nice to be able to shoot up there from Philadelphia. It felt really great to connect with people in person, you know, to share that collective energy and passion and just learn from so many incredible speakers. I'm also sort of exhausted from the whole thing, but it was really, really awesome. And today's guest, I'm sure, is no stranger to Horizons and to many of these conferences. And if you're a person that listens to podcasts about psychedelics, chances are you know Kyle Buller, my guest today. Kyle is the co-founder of Psychedelics Today, which is one of the most prolific podcasts and educational platforms devoted to psychedelics. I've really learned a lot from him and his co-host, Joe Moore, and all the other people that they feature on their podcast and platform. And even in the episode that I'm going to share with you, Kyle and I spoke a lot about embodiment, which is a subject I'm fairly well versed in. You know, in my work as an individual therapist, I've focused a lot on supporting people healing from disordered eating, breaking free from diet culture. So I deal with issues of embodiment a lot. I'm also trained as a yoga teacher. So it's always sort of in my framework, on my mind. But this conversation really opened me up to a new way of thinking about embodiment. And I guess in some ways that's really what psychedelics are all about, you know, this zooming out and giving ourselves a new perspective on things that we've been looking at already, or sometimes even bringing into focus something we didn't know was there at all. So as always, I'm just so grateful to my guests, in this case, Kyle, for sharing his wisdom and his knowledge. I find that people are just really generous and giving of their time and energy in this community, and it's really inspiring and really exciting. So I hope you enjoy it. This is a good one, and I'll catch you on the other side. Hi, Kyle. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jenny. Excited to be
here. Thanks for being here. Maybe to start, if you wouldn't mind just sharing sort of how you found your way to psychedelics, or how psychedelics found you.
Ooh, I like that. How did psychedelics find me? I'll try to keep it brief, but also go into some of the details. So I guess my interest in consciousness started at a young age. I even just think about like my childhood, just having kind of like mystical type of experiences. There's a few that really kind of stand out as a child. And then, you know, as you grow and your personality starts to form, and maybe you kind of block that part off, you know, it was like something in life kind of pulled me back that way. Stumbled across meditation through a book called Snowboarding to Nirvana when I was 15. I was doing like a book report my freshman year, and it was about a guy that went over to Nepal, ran into a monk and taught him transcendental meditation. So I was like thinking about just like, you know, how to really tap into those flow states to maybe kind of tap into the potential there with snowboarding and sports that I was doing. So that kind of grabbed my attention. I'm like, oh yeah, like this sounds really cool. And then about a year later, I always kind of say like, I actually snowboarded to Nirvana to some degree and had a pretty traumatic snowboarding accident, right in the Poconos in Pennsylvania there. And ended up rupturing my spleen, had a near death experience. Doctors said if I came in 5 or 10 minutes later, I would have been dead on arrival. But that experience really changed my life. I remember just sitting in the CAT scan machine as they're trying to figure out where the internal bleeding was coming from. And, you know, something just kind of came over me and said, you know, you're going back home. You're going back to the stars where we all come from. And this physical life is going to cease to exist, but you'll continue on. And I just really kind of started to ease into that. And it felt so beautiful. And also terrifying too. Like, I don't know if I'm going to wake up, but I don't know. This idea of going on this journey sounds really exciting. So after after waking up from that, after surgery and going through the hospital, you know, my view on reality just really shifted. It was so hard. I was 16, so I was a sophomore in high school, and just trying to come back to the mundane after just having such a powerful experience was really challenging. So ended up falling into a pretty deep existential crisis and depression, just thinking like, what am I doing with my time here? We're all kind of just, we kind of create our own suffering here. We put ourselves in boxes and we think that's okay. And, you know, I was just really kind of challenging that. And then I think that's also kind of like teenage rebellion too, right? Like push against the authoritarian figures in our lives and in school and whatnot. So that was just like really challenging trying to come back and navigate that. Obviously that's a time in your life where you're really trying to explore who you are as a person and form an identity. And I was just in the midst of, you know, nothing matters. Like I just want to give up on everything and go move into the woods and just really pursue, you know, my interests and why am I wasting my time doing things I don't want to be doing. And then I ended up graduating high school and still just feeling a lot of like depersonalization and derealization from that trauma, right? So it's like the physical trauma, the psycho-spiritual trauma, coming back to like an environment that just felt kind of like toxic and heavy at times, really just wanting to escape. And I think I had some experiences with alcohol. I really didn't touch many drugs in high school. After that accident, I was just like, I'm as high as I ever need to be. You know, like I don't understand why people are trying to alter their consciousness. So it wasn't until after high school I really started to experiment. And I think I already had some pretty powerful experiences with cannabis. But a friend, we had some mushrooms and I had a smaller experience beforehand. It was kind of like a mini micro dose. And none of that would really prep me for this experience I was about to go through. I had an experience with psilocybin that really helped me to kind of recontextualize that psycho-spiritual trauma, the physical trauma, and helped to provide some answers that I was really looking for after I had that near-death experience. And after that experience, I just was thinking like, whoa, what is going on here? Like, how could I eat something that grows from the earth that literally kind of like replicated my near-death experience, had me relive certain aspects of that. And it was just so eerie. I'm like, what's going on here? How could that feel so similar? So that just got me super fascinated. I was like, I have to just figure out what the hell is going on here because it's just too interesting not to keep asking these questions. So that was kind of like my entry point into this field.
Yeah. So when you first, you know, used psilocybin, were you expecting it to be healing in any way, or it was just a
It's funny that we're always talking about set and setting and, you know, really thinking about the times in your life where you don't want to do this. And I was definitely in a time in my life where, you know, set and setting was an idea. Well, the setting was really nice. It was out in nature with friends, with one friend, but my mindset was horrible. You know, I was really grappling with like a lot of suicidal ideation, escapism. I didn't want to be here. And it was actually through that experience, I really got to analyze a lot of my suicidal thinking. And it was really oriented towards wanting to return to the numinous, just not really being able to stick with mundane reality at times and stick with like human suffering. I was just like, no, I experienced this bliss, this beauty. I felt this sense of going home and I just keep wanting to go back there. And so there was an aspect during that psilocybin experience where, you know, it got really, really, really dark. I thought about killing myself in that trip and thought like, I can't go back to normal reality knowing what I know and knowing what I just saw during this experience. But there was a time when I started to analyze that and say, wait a minute, having these thoughts, I never wanted to die physically. There was a part of my psyche that wanted to let go. And I needed to let go of that part because it was, you know, wanting attention. Yeah, maybe I just even wanted to be heard, right? Like there was something inside of me that just wanted a release. And it wasn't necessarily like, I want this physical life to end. It was just this part of me inside that just wanted to be heard, be seen, and just let go.
Yeah, I mean, that's such a profound experience to have as a teenager, right? I mean, there's like normal teenage angst and questioning authority, like you said, but to to question like all reality and existence at that age, when I'm sure that's not what a lot of your friends were talking about and dealing with.
No, not at all. It felt very lonely. You know, I'm like, am I crazy? Like, it feels like I had some sort of conversation with the numinous God, whatever I want to call it. I felt that in my bones, but I didn't have anything to really like back that up experientially. It was just something that was just so in my bones. And yeah, coming back and being like, we're all living in this big lie. Like, school is just factory producing kids. Fuck this. Like, we're all just, you know, brainwashed. Let's break free from it. And everybody's like, what is what's going on?
Yeah. Did your family, you know, sort of know what was going on for you and know how you were starting to address it, or?
Not so much. I wasn't very open with my family about more of the psychological and emotional things that were going on, just because I didn't really know how to communicate kind of those spiritual or mystical aspects. Like, and I didn't really know how to communicate that with anybody. I tried to like communicate it here and there with like people in school, like teachers, when they're asking me certain things. And it was like a few years ago, my mom found this letter from a teacher, or it was an email. She printed it out, and the teacher was like, you know, do you know Kyle's new philosophy on life? Like, it's pretty like radical, and maybe you should give him another near-death experience because he's just not appreciating school. He's very smart and talented, but he's not applying himself. Like, maybe you need to shake him up. And I was just like, whoa, like hearing that. And like, yeah, I guess like the teacher not really understanding it. And I remember one time I got in trouble and I got sent down to the principal's, and, you know, I'm trying to explain to the principal this new way of seeing. And she was just like, you should just be thankful you're alive. Why isn't that enough? And I'm like, you don't understand like the psycho emotional spiritual stuff that I'm like grappling with right now. And so whenever I tried to bring some of that stuff up, it was like, you're alive. And maybe that's just part of our culture, because like, we don't have this language embedded. We don't understand exceptional experiences. And, you know, we're just not really, I guess, like thinking about some of that stuff and how these extraordinary experiences can really impact somebody on that psycho-spiritual level.
We're so closed off from death, right? Yeah. In our culture. So how could we possibly imagine what it's like to come that close? Like, we stay so far away from it.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And I think that's like hard to even chat about. You know, I was just so open about like my death process and feeling comfortable. And, you know, you just feel people maybe get uneasy about that. And just saying like, you know, cause there was a part, you know, about like a year or so, like after that accident, like I was really angry at the doctors that they saved my life. Like, I didn't want to come back. There was a part of me going like, what the hell am I doing here? You know, like I felt like I was going home. I felt like I was just in this like blissful bubble, and that was it. I was excited. Like, my journey was about to begin. But yeah, interesting. Yeah. My journey was about to begin here. it was, right. But, yeah.
Took a U-turn.
Yeah, took a U-turn.
Yeah. I'm interested to hear how things progressed from there. And in particular, I know you work with holotropic breathwork, which I'm really interested to hear sort of how you came to that. And maybe you can even give like a brief description of what that is.
Yeah, so there were a few other experiences that kind of really put me on this path too. It was a few other psychedelic experiences in my early 20s that kind of catapulted me into a spiritual emergence process. And that really kind of threw me in the deep end of the waters. Like, I thought like, oh, some of this other stuff, this was just very intense to navigate on my own. So that actually made me start doing more of my internal work and needing to find resources. So I stumbled across the work of Stan Grof. I was reading more about transpersonal psychology, and I was like, I need to study this. So I tried to search for schools, and there was one school here on the East Coast in Vermont that had a bachelor's in transpersonal psychology. And so my original goal was to move out to Colorado, be a ski bum, maybe go to Naropa. They had a master's in transpersonal psych there. But yeah, the school in Vermont had one. And so that ended up finding that school. I ended up gravitating towards that. And there I was really fortunate enough to attend a workshop, and it was a weekend workshop. I got like one school credit for it in holotropic breathwork. Now the teachers that I've been working with for over a decade, they were instructors there. They were offering the workshop. And, you know, since I was a fan of Stan's work, I was like, I need to do this. I was hearing how powerful it was. I've had lots of experience. I guess this is more kind of like a little legal caveat, is that I had a lot of experience with holotropic breathwork, and then my training, like our teachers teach and put on holotropic breathwork workshops, but we're kind of they're training us in what we call transpersonal breathwork, dream shadow transpersonal, since holotropic's trademarked and I didn't go through their training program. I've been with them for a bit. So holotropic breathwork is a intensified breathing technique that was developed by Dr. Stan Groff and his wife Christina Groff. And for those listening that don't know Stan's work, is that he was a pioneer in LSD research, did lots of stuff over in Prague, and then came over here in the 60s. And started to continue his research down in Maryland Psychiatric Research Center, and then Spring Grove. And then the counterculture hit. That all kind of dried up because of the war on drugs. And Stan found himself out in Esalen. He was a scholar in residence, writing some of his books and just kind of doing some of his review there from his notes. And then the founders over at Esalen just asked him, hey, you want to do a workshop? You know, there's a lot of like fun things going on at Esalen at that time. I mean, it was definitely like a mecca of like, you know, physicists coming through, people that are interested in spirituality, yogis, shamans, all sorts of stuff. And so they ended up developing this breathing technique that can elicit an extraordinary experience, a psychedelic-like experience. And the core components is intensified breathing, evocative music, focused body work, group process, and expressive art. So it's usually done in a group. You pair up with somebody else, somebody sits with you, and then the breather starts to breathe. And we play really loud music, usually have eye shades, and it's a very kind of internal process. And people can have, you know, really deep emotional and physical catharsis. I was pretty skeptical of it, thinking I've had this like near-death experience and some pretty profound psychedelic experiences. So I went down to the workshop. I was like, this isn't going to be anything. You know, people are telling me how psychedelic it was. And I got to breathe second. I went down with my roommate and he went on the first day. And so I'm sitting in this room watching all these other people breathe, and people are like crying and screaming and shouting and kicking. And I just thought, what the hell did I sign up for? This looks nuts. But I ended up having my session on Halloween. It was Halloween of 2010. And it was a really profound experience of reliving that near-death experience, reliving this birth trauma that I went through. And I was just so blown away by like what was coming up. I remember the session first started off with me choking. It felt like there was an umbilical cord wrapped around my neck. I shot up from my mat. I remember just grabbing my neck, like gasping for air. And it felt like something was just wrapping around me.
Wow.
And I asked my mom about that, and she said, well, that's really weird because like you almost died coming out. You have the umbilical cord wrapped all around you. It's like you came out blue. And so, you know, after that whole experience, I said, whoa, what's
going on here?
This is really interesting.
Yeah. It's so profound to me that within our own bodies is, you know, like this in the entire capacity to reach, you know, altered states of consciousness. And so you were starting, so you were having sort of all of these experiences. What was going on like in the interim, like for you, sort of from experience to experience?
Oh man, the whole time, like I was going through a lot of the stuff from, you know, 16 up until like probably until I felt around like 25, maybe 24, 25. I just kept thinking like, how the hell do I keep my feet on the ground? You know, there's just so many unique, weird experiences that like just challenged me in certain ways. And, you know, going back to that idea of spiritual emergence, you know, I just kept thinking like, am I going crazy? Who the hell do I talk to this stuff about without feeling like pathologized and thinking like, you know, I am going crazy. So yeah, in between all that stuff, I'm just thinking like, how do I keep my feet on the ground? Because like, it's a little bonkers.
And I mean, literally, right? Like, how do we re-embody after, you know, this sort of experience of disembodiment. And it's interesting, you know, I work in primarily in eating disorders and body image, and embodiment and trying to get embodied is such a big part of the work that a lot of my clients do. And it's been really interesting for me to start to like explore these tools and this medicine that is sort of fundamentally disembodying.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I liked about breath work. That's what I found out with like psychedelics. It was so ethereal. Like when I would go into those realms, I thought I would be able to figure everything out. And it was just so out there. And since it really reminded me of like my death experience, like I would go into these like super big transpersonal realms and it felt so familiar. It was like this homecoming all the time. I could go into this like deep darkness, this shadow material, but feel at home. But it just felt so mind, like kind of like ethereal. It was like all out there. And that's what really turned me on to breath work. And I think that's what really changed everything for me, was coming back to the body and really processing a lot of that trauma and a lot of that experience through, you know, that physical catharsis, feeling into it, and not trying to disconnect from my experience. It was really kind of fully embracing it, being able to scream, being able to cry, being able to like feel all that pain in the body instead of like trying to go off and escape from it. It was totally different. And that's what really drew me into that work, of thinking like, whoa, I am so ungrounded with all these other techniques. Like I need to be here. And it's really challenging to be here in a body. And, you know, especially just thinking about the complexities of bodies, you know, you're talking about eating disorders. What is our relationship to that? Even just like thinking about physical traumas, like things aren't working, or like, you know, I have all this scar tissue on my abdomen now. And, mm-hmm. you know, I can feel some of that still pull at certain things. I'm like, oh, like I hate this thing sometimes. Or what happens when we get sick, right? And our bodies start to fail us. It's like, this machinery is just, you know, it's frustrating. So it's hard to be in the body because it does remind us of suffering, decay, and death. And that's really hard to sit with and I guess be with at times, right? But I think that's also kind of part of the magic. For me at least, it's like, how do I redevelop that relationship with the body? Even though, you know, there's still a lot of traumas in there. I have like certain issues with certain things. It's like, okay, how do I develop a relationship here instead of just trying to push it away and think that it's, you know, negative or bad or
mm-hmm. I'm curious if you wouldn't mind sharing some of that work of sort of reestablishing a relationship with your body.
It's been a process, and I wouldn't say like I'm in means an expert in it because it's always shifting, right? But I think a lot of it comes down to acceptance. It's like, okay, like this is here. And what am I saying to that part of my body? This actually came up recently in a massage I had. And it was right after a ketamine session that I had with myself. It was really interesting to do that work and then have a body work session. And I could feel like all this, like, I guess, like hatred towards like this certain area of like, I don't have this spleen, I'm immunocompromised. There's a lot of fear around getting sick, especially during COVID. And then I think about like some of that like scar tissue that's been causing me just like pain and that chronic pain that I've been working through, and just how like I've been really pushing a lot of like, you know, like anger towards that area and holding that, and then reevaluating and saying, whoa, what's going on there? Why am I feeling that way? Can I bring a little bit more like loving energy, or just accept like, wow, you've been through a lot. And how can you just feel into that? And it's okay. Right. And that was really huge to just kind of, think about that and be like, oh yeah, I am putting a lot of energy in there, be like, ah, like this damn stuff just keeps pulling on things and it's painful. And I wish my life was different, but also maybe seeing mm-hmm. the gifts in it too, right? Like it's definitely slowed me down. I definitely like have sometimes that like adrenaline junkie, and I'm like, yeah, now I know like the limits of a body, and yeah, maybe I won't go jump off that mountain or do this thing now. Like it has slowed me down, and I appreciate that now. I'm like, okay, how do I how do I redevelop this relationship and respect it and want to take care of it in a different way? It's still hard though.
Yeah, well, we're not taught how to have a loving relationship with our bodies, whether that's, you know, weight stigma or just the aging process and or sickness. Like, we're sort of just socialized to fix problems.
Yeah, just thinking about like what we're like portrayed in media constantly, right? Like optimization and having this like, you know, finely fit tuned body that's not going to fail us. And it's like, that's not the reality for a lot of people, right? And that's okay, right? Bodies do their own thing. I remember just chatting with one of my teachers a few months ago, and just like accepting that and like how hard that is to like accept, like, yeah, we get sick sometimes and our bodies fail us. And this was really about like, as COVID started coming on, and we were talking about like people thinking the spiritual aspects of things. And he was just kind of bringing up, he's like, sometimes you just get cancer and that's what it is. And, you know, this is like somebody who's a shamanic practitioner, and it's like, you know, how do you just accept that bodies just do their thing at times, and sometimes there is no control over it. And that's really hard, I guess, also kind of sitting with that uncertainty and some of the truth and reality there.
Yeah, there's a lot of grief in it too. Yeah. I don't know if that was how you conceptualized part of that.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of grief.
I'm wondering if we can just go back a minute, you know, when you talked about really feeling through some of those traumatic experiences, you know, in your journeys, in your breath work. I think so many people I talk to, that's what scares them most about psychedelics, is facing some of that. And I'm wondering if you can talk about the difference between facing that in a journey versus facing that just when you're triggered or having a flashback.
Oh, that's a really interesting question. When I think about facing that when we're just triggered normally, right? Like our nervous system kicks in and it's like either fight or flight or freeze. And we're not really thinking about stuff, right? Our body's just kind of like taking control and doing what our defense systems want to do. With the journey space, yeah, sometimes it just comes up, and there is something that's interesting. I mean, you can get in that fight or flight or freeze or shutdown phase when we are confronted with a lot of that deep shadow material, I guess we'll call it. But there is something there where it's you can't ignore it. It just is there. You're confronted with it and you have to sit with it. And in my experience, the more I've pushed it away, it gets louder and louder and louder. And so there's this part where it's like, I just have to sit with this because it's the only way through. And when I think about my near-death experience, that was the one thing, like, you know, that voice that I heard, whether that was more of this internal intelligence self within me, my higher self, or if it was something else, I really don't know how to describe that voice that I heard. But, you know, there was one thing that came up. It's like, the more that you struggle with this, the harder the transition is going to be. So if you can learn how to relax into it and be with it, the easier this is going to be for you. And so that is really great advice, even with psychedelics and confronting that stuff. The more we struggle with that shadow material as it comes up, sometimes the harder it's going to be. It's like, oh, I don't want to think about that thought. And then, you know, a million more of those thoughts come up and you're like, ah, and instead of just saying, okay, I'm feeling this right now. This is hard. What does it feel like to express that? And then, you know, some of those vulnerabilities come up, especially if you're in a group setting, something like that. It's like, can I cry right now? Can I show like my emotions towards somebody? Whether that's a therapist, a friend, in the group, it takes a lot of vulnerability to actually feel a lot of that emotion. Because it's scary to want to express that, or maybe show somebody how you're really suffering and what you're holding on to.
Have those experiences changed how you express yourself, how you ask for help or support?
Yeah, I think that's like the integration of these experiences. And, you know, there's ups and downs. I mean, I try to show up in some relationships a bit differently. Other times it's more of a challenge to integrate those insights. So I also try to like you know, remind myself to be okay if those changes don't happen right away, you know, to take these kind of small approaches and be like, okay, I'm doing it bit by bit. I'm noticing that come up. I notice I want to show up differently. But yeah, they definitely have, you know, really shifted the way that I show up at times for sure.
And that, I think that's such an important piece about it being incremental, you know, something that I'm really trying to explore and convey is that reality that rarely is there like a one-time transformative journey or experience that changes everything, right? Like the work happens after and in between.
Yeah, and to think about like how disruptive that would be to your system, right? And these are like some of the big integration challenges. So, okay, for example, like when I was, you know, down in Costa Rica a few years ago, I had this insight around communication within families. And I'm like, oh, there's just so much stuff I want to say. But like, you know, what if I came back and just showed up myself, right? And just fully embrace that. And that's kind of disrupting to the system, right? It's like the system can't tolerate that much change, even though like I want that change to happen. It's like, okay, I need to show up and actually do some of the work and do kind of like this small incremental changes right away. You know, and that's just my system, right? Maybe other systems can tolerate that because maybe they're a little bit more supportive and they're like, okay, yes, we're fully supporting this. You know, some of the systems that I feel like I'm in, it's like, nah, that's threatening, right? And it's like, I can't do that right away. So that's been some of the challenges, at least in my personal work, where it's like, ooh, okay, like how do I show up and then be vulnerable to express some of these things? Like I said, right? Like I didn't really express a lot of this stuff when I was going through it early on with my family. And it's like trying to come back and do that again, even though that's been so many years and I've had so many other experiences, it's still a process. And yeah, it's tough work. I mean, that is the work. It's like, okay, like, how am I showing up to do this constantly?
Yeah. Do you have a formal integration practice or do you just sort of try different things depending on the medicine, your experience, what you need?
I think like in the past, so I mean, this is something I've been really exploring. So in 2017 at Psychedelics Today, we ended up creating a course called Navigating Psychedelics Lessons on Self-Care and Integration. This concept, you know, we've talked about it a lot in the breathwork community, and I did a lot of kind of like writing about it during my undergrad, but it wasn't like, and it was talked about within psychedelic science, but you know, that conversation really started getting started a little bit later. And so there weren't too many resources around it. And so we put together a whole series of different practices, tips, like what some of the experts are saying on how to integrate experiences. Something I've been really kind of bumping up against lately, and this is something my teacher Lenny, who's my breathwork teacher, has really kind of put out there, and it does make sense. And when I think about it, I'm like, yeah, I think this is what I've been really trying to emphasize too with this embodiment thing, is like integration. So you had this experience and now you need to bring it back here, and they're separate of each other. But what if it's all here in this moment, right? What if, like, so what are we even integrating? If we can understand that all experience is happening and this is just one part of it, you know, do we actually need to sit there and think about, you know, what I need to integrate? So, I mean, the one example is like that he gave is, say he has a background in philosophy, so really focusing on like, you know, Greek culture, and one of it is like the Eleusinian mysteries, right? These Greek possible psychedelic mystery rites, and his whole thing was that, like, you know, these folks, the world was animated and alive, right? And so when we're talking about spirituality, we're talking about like things having spirit, that was normal for them, right? And you think about like shamanism, it's like, oh, the world's alive, the plants and trees are speaking to me. But I think from like our Western perspective, since we don't believe in that, we do divide that, right? It's like the Newtonian Cartesian paradigm, split between mind and body. And it's like, these are separate and we need to bring them together. No, they've always have been together. So how do we really start to focus on that? And so, yeah, there's this concept that, I've been exploring and did a podcast with a colleague and friend, Dr. Michael Sapiro, what was it called? Bringing the mystical into the ordinary. Like, how do we bring this and just have it show up in our lives all the time? How do we like just feel it in our body and show up in each moment and say, this is alive. It's happening right now.
That really, really resonates with me. I mean, that's sort of where I came up with the idea for everyday non-ordinary. Like, yeah, this doesn't have to be a thing that we go to Peru for a week, right? Like, every day, how do we access this? And I think to your point, also, we also sort of talk about it as if there are only two states of consciousness.
Right.
And there are so many in between. And so, I'm getting really curious about like how to access those more day to day.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as we're talking about this, I've just thought about that question you asked, how did I deal with like all the interim stuff? And I was thinking like, yeah, a lot of weird stuff is happening then. But I think that was also part of me just being open to everything and really bringing a lot of those experiences into my everyday, being able to see some of the magic unfolding in each moment. And just, yeah, being able to see that at all times, which, you know, if you're doing that, I mean, life starts to become psychedelic itself. You don't really need the psychedelic. You don't need some of these exceptional experiences to feel that and see that. I mean, you know, sometimes when I'm just feeling, you know, super down, or, you know, my human part of myself comes online, my mind, it's like, work or this or that. And, you know, I just go outside and just sit there, meditate, look at the sunset, maybe look how, you know, the bees fly around and pollinate and just see how interconnected everything is. And, you know, just appreciate what's unfolding in front of me. And to me, that's pretty psychedelic. Life itself is one psychedelic trip.
Totally. I've been recently, especially when I'm like angry about something on the I've been going outside and looking up at the sky and looking out past the clouds and like looking out as far as I can and having moments like that feel totally psychedelic. I'm totally like, where am I? What is happening? And it's amazing. And everything suddenly feels so small and stupid.
It's a great meditation, just looking up and just wondering, you know, our place here in the universe. And when you really can start to zoom out and have that experience, you go, what is all this? What am I doing here? This is pretty weird. We're just on a rock floating through space and we all think we have it figured out. And really, I mean, we're just one little speck of dust in this whole universe. And that's pretty cool. I mean, that is pretty crazy to think about.
It is. It is. It's been really, really freeing to practice that more regularly. And
we all there, right? Because we live in this world and we have to, you know, work and do our stuff. And, but yeah, it's like those little moments, right? If we can just like find those moments to just have that practice. So I guess that is my practice, actually, thinking about it. It's like just showing up and creating that space to connect with that sense of oneness, that numinous, and feeling just connected with everything. That's what helps me bring me back here, right? Like when I'm just feeling super stressed and just like, okay, how do I just feel connected to things? And just see that there's something bigger unfolding. And I think when we feel connected to that, life feels a little bit easier. Or maybe we can like rationalize some of the suffering that we're going through and feeling like it's okay. It's okay.
Mm-hmm. How does that relate to your embodied experience, like that sort of sense of interconnectedness?
It's an interesting question. So how does, yeah.
Yeah, just, I was just thinking more about embodiment and sort of, and maybe I should clarify, since I think about embodiment in a pretty specific way coming from the work I do. And so I tend to think about, you know, embodiment as being sort of the lived experience in our bodies, like sort of from the inside out, how am I relating to the world around me versus watching myself from this external.
Yeah. Again, I think that's like when I hear that, like the external and then the internal, it's like that split. Right. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's how I feel about it sometimes too, right? There is kind of that split. And I think the thing that I've really started to work on for me when I think about embodiment comes from like that death experience of thinking like, I'm here, and how do I just embrace what's in front of me? It's all connected. And how do I just really be in the moment, feel everything? And that's the spiritual practice for me. And so, there's been times where I think like a lot of these spiritual practices, it's always about transcending, transcending mind, transcending ego, transcending the body. And sometimes I feel like my practice is like, no, all that's here. And how do I really keep my feet on the ground and experience everything, even though experience leads to suffering, right? I mean, we experience pain, heartbreak, love, all this stuff. And that's really difficult to sit with. But like, how does that also connect to, like, connect you to yourself in a way that, I don't know, I guess we'll use spiritual, right? Like, it gives us a sense of deeper meaning and purpose in life when we can feel that on a different level. So I guess like the embodiment piece for me is really trying to bring that numinous experience down and really seeing it everywhere, feeling in my body, feeling it around me. And when I do feel that, it feels like everything is connected at all times. Mm-hmm. It's a practice. I walk around in that state all the time. It's like, okay, these are my reminders. I have to keep coming back when I'm feeling a certain way. I'm like, okay, how do I just feel this, be okay with it, and realize this is part of my experience. If you didn't have a body, you wouldn't be feeling any of this stuff. And that's what makes it so special. And when I think about, that more ethereal, like death soul realm, it's like, oh yes, this is what makes us us. Is that like in that state, it was just pure bliss and love to be rooted here. I mean, that's pretty special. You get to do things, right? You get to feel all these different emotions. Even the mystery and pain and appreciating that, right? How much does that bring us maybe closer to our sense of self or sense of purpose? Connects us to a deeper spiritual meaning in life. For me, it's like a feeling that I've experienced in those psychedelic experiences, in the near-death experience, and breath work. And it's like, okay, I got a glimpse of that. And so how do I just bring that in when I am feeling that way? It's a practice. It's not easy. And we're human, right? We're going to fall into that pain. We're going to fall into that suffering. And try to push it away, right? We want to feel good. It's like some of those experiences just, it sticks out. I'm like, oh yes, I experienced that once before. How can I try to bring this in the present moment?
Yeah. And well, with the medicine, right? With consciousness medicine, like that part of the brain or part of us that tells us it's like, it's going to kill us to feel those things is quieter, right? And so the experience of feeling it is different.
Yeah, I mean, well, when we start to feel those things, right, like our autonomic nervous system kicks in, like it's any sensation, it's like, ooh, this is scary, I need to push this down. So there is kind of like that biological aspect of our bodies that it's like telling us things are threatening. Right. Even to feel good is threatening, right? Especially those that have been through different abuses and traumas, where you need to be hypervigilant and on edge to feel safe and good. That's terrifying because that means you might be, your life might be in danger. That's also when we start to bring into some of those somatic aspects into the work too, right? Like understanding that, our bodies have been through a lot of stuff, and evolutionary, that's what keeps us alive. And it's like to react to our environments in certain ways, to feel that pain and want to push it away, right? I mean, if we just constantly felt depressed, probably wouldn't get anything done. We'd probably die and get eaten by the tigers and whatnot, right? So it's
right. Yeah, those parts, have developed to protect us and oftentimes end up over functioning. So. Yeah. Anything else that you want to say on that? Just on sort of anything that we've touched on or on, I don't know, your perspectives on integration or embodiment or.
Yeah, being in the body is hard. And when I think about psychedelic integration and just the psychedelic experience in general, it's so easy to want to push away the mundane and kind of get caught up in what we might call like spiritual bypassing, psychological bypassing, any sort of bypassing, right? It's like we don't want to deal with the things. Everything is much better in the numinous and the transpersonal. And, you know, if anybody's listening and, you know, you've had these experiences, just, you know, what does it feel like to come back here for a little bit? It might be challenging. It might trigger us. It might feel scary. It might feel, yeah, we'll feel a lot of different emotions. But what does it feel like to sit with that for a little bit? And really just try to embrace what's around us. And, you know, it doesn't have to be forever, right? Could you, what does that even feel like for a second? And just getting these little glimpses of the transpersonal numinous into the everyday, I think that's really important for that integration or that embodiment of the psychedelic experience. And just in general, right? Like, how do we show up and just want to be here, be more present with ourselves, be more present with our relationships, our friends, our family, with our work, right? It's so easy to just get so distracted and not be present. And yeah, for me, it's like, how do I come back and make space for all that at times? Very easy to get distracted and try to push everything away.
I love the invitation to just be curious and sort of open to the experience. And I can really feel how grounded you are in sort of this work and your healing and just sort of leaving that like invitation open, not, you know, telling anyone what they need to do, what they should do, what the next steps are, just like, what would it be like just to get curious about that?
Yeah. I mean, this is your experience, right? It's the only thing you really know. That's the only thing I really know is my experience. And I mean, that's what really kind of hit me. I think as I was like slipping away, I said, I got to leave all this behind. I remember my uncle was standing beside me. He just kept saying like, you're in good hands. He was a first responder and was able to get to the hospital right away. And I just immediately thought like, you know, this person's family, this is somebody I'm, you know, blood related to. And I can't take him where I'm about to go. Like, this is really, in those final moments, it was like, this is my journey and everybody is on their own individual journey. And what is that for you, right? How do we get in touch with that a little bit more? How do we become curious about it? You know, I sometimes think we're so distracted by everybody else's journey. We don't really get to tune in and say, you know, who am I? What am I doing here? How do I want to show up every day? Instead of, you know, trying to be influenced by everybody else around us and having other people tell us to show up, because in those final moments, that was the only thing that really mattered to me, was how did I live my life right now? And am I okay? And at that moment, you know, since I was young, I felt okay. But I mean, it's something that I think about often. It's as if like death is on my shoulders constantly. And it's like, Hey, what are you doing? And then, you know, I'm always kind of in these death meditations. I always come back to this saying I heard in a death and dying class. It's like, how you prepare for death is how you live your life, and how you live your life is how you prepare for death. So just, you know, thinking about that. And I think that's what the embodiment faced to me is like, yeah, if I'm gonna, like, when I experience that again, am I going to feel okay with how I showed up in the world and how I really embraced everything around me? And that's been a really kind of powerful teaching and meditation. Hard to do, you know, it's really challenging to kind of confront your own mortality and think about that every day. But for me, it's just, I don't know, it's sometimes it can get a little neurotic, but other times I think it does have a healthy aspect of, you know, this idea of soul purpose, life purpose, right? I think so many people struggle to connect with themselves, to find purpose in life. And who are we when we don't feel like we have any meaning or purpose? It's funny, like talking about how I was in high school, years ago, I found an old paper I wrote for my junior English class. And I love that class because we were exploring a lot of existential writers. And it was the most depressing paper I've ever written. It was like, life is meaningless. There's no purpose in my life at that time. Mm-hmm. It was devoid of purpose. And that's just so sad to read. And like reading that, I'm like, ooh, I feel depressed for my younger self that just felt that way. Instead of, yeah, connecting to ourselves to find some purpose here. Pretty cool. We get to wake up every day, even though there is a lot of suffering that happens. I mean, this is the only thing you'll know for right now. And that's pretty weird to think about.
Yeah, this question of who am I, even when I don't feel, you know, a sense of purpose or that I have a purpose, feels really important and really stands out to me of just, yeah, like fundamentally, you know, what is my soul about? Like, who is this self? Yeah. Is so important.
Yeah. What are you doing here?
Great question. Where else can people find more of your resources? Where can people connect with you? You have so much to offer.
Yeah, thank you. If you want to follow me over at Psychedelics Today, that's where I spend probably most of my time. So it's psychedelicstoday.com. We have a podcast that's on any podcast app that you listen to, on all the social media platforms as well. So you can check us out over there. If you want to check out any of my personal stuff, I haven't been keeping too much up to date every once in a while here and there, but that's Setting Sun Wellness. So settingsunwellness.com and my Instagram, Setting Sun Wellness as well. So those are where you can find me at the moment.
Great. Thank you. And I know you have a lot of great resources for both clinicians and non-clinicians, people just exploring this for themselves. And yeah, like I said, I follow very humbly in your footsteps. Thanks. I've been really grateful. Been really grateful for your work and for your time. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Jenny. I appreciate it.
So that's the show. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Kyle Buller. Make sure to head to the show notes for Kyle's full bio and links to all the places where you can keep in touch with him and find out more about his work. There are lots of resources at Psychedelics Today, both for clinicians and non-clinicians, people just, you know, interested in using psychedelics for their own healing purposes. You can also find the links to connect with me, follow me on Instagram, follow the podcast, and sign up for my newsletter. And if you liked this episode, if you're liking the show, I would love if you could leave a rating or review. You know, it really just helps to get the podcast out there, help more people to find this resource, and hopefully spread the word on the power and potential for psychedelic medicines in our individual and collective healing. So, thanks for listening, and hope to talk to you soon.